You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta, our look at the infinite ways in which we express ourselves creatively. I'm Lois Reitzes. In this hour of City Lights, it's a very literary hour. Author, journalist, cultural critic Valerie Boyd joins me to discuss her much-acclaimed biography of Harlem Renaissance writer Zora Neale Hurston. We'll continue our interview with writer-historian Ray Arsenault, who chronicled Marian Anderson's historic concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the spark to the tinder that was the American Civil Rights Movement. And later in the hour, our mystery guest, Michelle Ross, brings us another reason to curl up with a good book. Well, speaking of good books, tomorrow at noon in the Balzer Theater at Herons downtown, Georgia State University presents Southern Writers on Stage, Zora Neale Hurston and Alice Walker. The lecture will be given by Valerie Boyd, who joins me in the studio now. Valerie, thank you so much for driving in on this very rainy, traffic-filled day.
My pleasure, Lois. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, you're the author of Wrapped in Rainbows, a biography of Zora Neale Hurston. Nowadays, she holds her rightful place as Queen of the Harlem Renaissance. But that was not always the case, as we'll get into later. First, would you please give us a snapshot of Harlem in 1925?
Harlem in 1925 was a place where Black people wanted to get to. It was a place where being Black was a virtue, and people wanted to celebrate themselves. And it was a place where they felt that they could do that, where they could be themselves, they could celebrate their arts and their culture. And Zora Neale Hurston arrived, you know, in Harlem in 1925 with that kind of excitement. She had grown up in the South, in Florida, and had gone to school at Howard University in D.C., but actually left school to go to New York because she wanted to become a part of this movement known as the Harlem Renaissance. And it was kind of a flowering of Black arts and literature and culture. And it was an exciting time where you could find community, a community of other writers and thinkers and artists and intellectuals. And I think, you know, we have, Atlanta has been seen as a place like that in the past and in the present, even, you know, there are, and because of social media and our kind of electronic world, the world has shrunk a little bit. So we can find global community. We can find other artists and intellectuals and people who think like us, even if it's just through a social media kind of relationship. But if we put ourselves back in 1925, you can imagine how exciting it would be to go to a place where you could find other people who were interested in the things that you were interested in and interested in expressing themselves in an original way. And that's what attracted Zora to Harlem.
And how satisfying it must have been for these writers and creative artists to have white people want to come and hear them, read their work, listen to their music, finally.
Yeah, I mean, it was Harlem was a place that attracted people who were interested in innovative music and culture and literature. And so, for adventurous white people, it was also a place to kind of, meet people who weren't like them, but who also just had interesting stories that they wanted to be a part of and wanted to hear. So there was a kind of loosening of the racial separation. That was, of course, it was looser in the North and in New York than it was anywhere, but there was still some segregation in terms of housing. But Harlem provided this kind of cultural community that was welcoming to everyone and where everybody could meet and mingle and exchange ideas.
Storied on many levels. We're talking with Valerie Boyd about Zora Neale Hurston, the Harlem Renaissance, and more to come. You're listening to City Lights. I hear Billie Holiday in the background. This is WABE Atlanta.
Maybe I shall meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home that's meant for two.
So when Zora arrived in Harlem, was she instantly appreciated?
She actually got pretty instant appreciation because her sort of coming out party was Opportunity Magazine writing contest. It was a literary contest. And she won several prizes that night and also sort of used that as a place for announcing her arrival. One of the stories that she wrote that won an award, it won second place, was a story called Color Struck. So Zora went to the after party wearing a very colorful scarf, and she flung it over her shoulders and yelled out the name of her story, Color Struck. That was her entrance into the party. And so people noticed her. Even that very night, Langston Hughes wrote a letter the next day to Carl Van Vechten, who was a white photographer and philanthropist and supporter of the movement. And he wrote this letter saying, Zora Neale Hurston is a clever girl. I'd like to get to know her better.
Wow. Okay.
So that was Langston Hughes' first impression of her.
And it doesn't get any better than that, does it? So
right.
She was instantly appreciated for all purposes when she arrived.
I think she was appreciated as a kind of a storyteller and a personality of the Harlem Renaissance. It took a while for her peers to appreciate her as a writer. And to be honest, you know, Zora Neale Hurston is often thought of as this great figure of the Harlem Renaissance. But the truth is that, you know, the Harlem Renaissance sort of ended with the stock market crash in 1929. And sort of the onset of the Great Depression. And all of Zora's work was published, all of her major novels and books of nonfiction were published in the 1930s after the great flowering of the 1920s. So in the 1920s, she was mostly writing short stories, essays, getting those sorts of things published, and doing some collecting of folklore. She was also finishing up her education at Barnard. So she was more she wasn't as published an author. She was more of a personality of the Harlem Renaissance movement.
And one of the important things about your biography is that it delineates these dates. Indeed, it was such a short span of time for the Harlem Renaissance, similar to Berlin in the 1920s, also that very concentrated, febrile, short span of creativity. But she lived on and God, how the world changed quickly.
Right. And I do think the Harlem Renaissance, you know, that period, that short period was foundational. I mean, it helped her to become the artist that she became, and it solidified her as a part of that community of writers and artists. So they all influenced each other. They all fed from each other and nurtured each other, and it informed their work for decades to come, including Hurston's work. And one of the things about Hurston's work is that she was coming from the South. So she was writing about what she called the Negro farthest down. You know, self-taught black people who worked in, you know, in rural Florida, who worked on turpentine camps and, you know, on farms. I mean, sharecroppers, essentially. And so these were the people that she had grown up around, and she was trying to give voice to them in her literature.
What a contrast. What a shock it must have been to go from a rural upbringing to life in New York. Although at Howard, she would have had something of a transition in D.C., I guess.
Yeah, and she was ready for that New York life. But going back to your question of how was she received in Harlem, she was ready for New York, but I don't think New York and Harlem were quite ready for her.
She was not understated.
She was not understated, and she was giving voice to these self-educated Black folks in the South who she knew very well. She was not trying to write in intellectual language. She was saying, the language of these people is literature. The language of these people is poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to elevate it to that level. And so what she was writing about was maybe a little different from what some of her peers were writing about. And so at first it was a little difficult for them to understand.
And essential to a complete understanding of what African Americans were living at that time.
Right, right. And, you know, the playwright August Wilson says the American South is the ancestral homeland for African Americans. You know, we all came through the South because of the slave trade. And so the Great Migration northward, you know, that's an amazing and wonderful thing that changed America, right? But we started in the South. And so as African Americans, that's our ancestral homeland, and that's what Hurston celebrated.
Talking with Valerie Boyd about Soar Neale Hurston, still to come, Alice Walker. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. Valerie, would you read a portion from Zora Neale Hurston's essay, How It Feels to Be Colored Me?
She wrote, I am not tragically colored. There is no great sorrow dammed up in my soul, nor lurking behind my eyes. I do not belong to the sobbing school of Negrohood who hold that nature somehow has given them a low-down dirty deal, and whose feelings are all hurt about it.
How radical and proud she was. You know, having become a teenager in the 1960s and, you know, everything, we thought we invented everything and Black is Beautiful. Of course, that's when it was born. Not. How daring she was to celebrate this. When I read that, it made me think about a photograph I once saw. Perhaps you're familiar with an Annie Leibovitz photo of Whoopi Goldberg in a bathtub of milk. Because, talk about heartbreaking. Whoopi thought when she was a little girl, if she bathed in milk, that she might turn white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a difficult part of our history as Americans. And interestingly, Hurston was never indoctrinated in inferiority. She was shielded from racism largely because she grew up in an all-Black town called Eatonville, Florida. And it was a town where her father was mayor for several terms. It was a town that was founded and incorporated by African-Americans in the late 1800s. And so being born in 1891 and being able to grow up in this all-Black community, really, as I said, it shielded her from the kind of harsh racism that most African-Americans experience. And so that's where she got that sense of cultural pride, that sense of, you know, being Black is a virtue, it's a gift, it's a wonderful thing.
How did she go from being queen of the Harlem Renaissance? How did she go from that summit to dying and being buried, for the most part, in an unmarked grave?
I think Hurston has several summits. So the Harlem Renaissance was one. But her most famous novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God, wasn't published until 1937. And then she went on to publish several other books. So her summit as a writer, as a creative artist, was really the 1930s and the 1940s. That's when she published all of her seven books that were published in her lifetime. And it was indeed a summit. I mean, she was the most significant and the most published Black woman writer of the first half of the 20th century.
And then?
And then, I think the being buried in an unmarked grave is always presented as this big tragic thing that happened to her. But the truth is, even though Hurston was this well-published writer, she never made enough money from her writing. You know, the largest advance she ever received was $500, which is about $5,000 in today's money. The largest royalty check she ever received was $973. That was for Their Eyes Were Watching God. Mm. Now, that sounds difficult to take, but I'm a Black woman writer today, and I can tell you it's difficult to make your living as a writer. That's why I teach. Most writers teach. Because writing books itself, unfortunately, doesn't pay that well unless you, you know, write a New York Times bestseller and a movie is made from it and all of that. Then you can become a wealthy author. That was not Hurston's experience, and it's not most writers' experience, no matter Black, white, men, women, it doesn't matter. So, but what mattered was that it was difficult in segregated America for her to get the kind of teaching job that's available to me now. I teach at the University of Georgia. I have wonderful students. I have great colleagues. Hurston was limited to Black colleges and universities. Those were her only teaching options. And she, frankly, didn't take to teaching. But what she was committed to was making her living as a writer, making her living as an artist, and making that central to who she was. And she chose that even when it didn't pay well, which was most of the time.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm talking with Valerie Boyd on City Lights from WABE Atlanta. We have Alice Walker to thank for restoring Hurston's rightful place. Would you tell us in the time remaining about your work with researching Alice Walker's restoration of Zora Neale Hurston to her proper place on the pedestal?
Well, as you pointed out, Hurston was buried in an unmarked grave in 1960. And in 1973, Alice Walker, who was then a very young writer, this is well before The Color Purple, well before the world knew her name, she was 29 years old, and she had read Zora Neale Hurston and was inspired by her work. And so she made a pilgrimage to Fort Pierce, Florida, where Hurston is buried. And she made her way through a weed-choked, segregated cemetery and found Hurston's grave and placed a marker on it proclaiming Zora Neale Hurston a genius of the South. And she wrote an amazing essay about this experience that was published in Ms. Magazine in 1975. And that essay is really what jump-started the revival of interest in Hurston and got other scholars to start writing about her and thinking about her and understanding her role in American literature.
Does Alice Walker credit Zora Neale Hurston for informing her own writing?
Absolutely. Because they both wrote about and write about the American South, the Negro farthest down, about Black people who are resilient and who have created a rich culture and rich lives. So for Alice Walker to read Zora Neale Hurston, to read that a Black woman was writing about this topic, about this rich subject matter in the 1930s, was inspiring for Walker as a young writer. and helped her to kind of see her path clear as a writer.
Mm. We have just a minute remaining. Valerie Board, it really has been a privilege talking with you, and I thank you so much for joining us today. Tomorrow's lecture you will give in the Balzer Theater at Herons, and the topic again, please.
I'll be talking about Zora Neale Hurston and Alice Walker and about their relationship. I'll be reading a little bit from both of their work and talking about the connection between the two and my research on both writers.
Fantastic. Valerie Boyd's biography of Zora Neale Hurston is wrapped in rainbows. It's exquisite. You're listening to City Lights on 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
When it comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand. Then in a little while, he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I shall meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home that's meant for two, from which I'll never roam. What would you? And so all else above, I'm dreaming of the man I love. Would you, and so all else above.